It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long. Running things behind the scenes, Steve Geller will join us for our Bet365 triple option feature at 5:45. I want to tell everybody Matthew Paris, who covers the Saints beat for the Times-Picayune Morning Advocate and is at the owners' meetings, will be on with us a little after 4:20 today. Talk about rule changes. Also, some of the comments from Kellen Moore at the owners' meetings. And I think probably the one thing that I've heard a number of times about are the Saints that can come back to Metairie to train. And Kellen Moore affirmed that today, that they will be back in Metairie. I'm sure that they will take a road trip, so to speak, probably back out to California to train against either the Rams or the Chargers, something in that range. But they will be back in Metairie. And so that was certainly one of the things out of the press conference that Kellen Moore had with reporters at the owners' meetings, and certainly some rule changes. And one of them is finally, and I've been waiting for this now, the method for measuring first downs in the NFL will switch from the chain gangs to camera-based technology, and they're going to do it in 2025. The traditional chain crew will remain on the sidelines just in case the technology part doesn't quite kick in. So that's one of the rule changes. Also, the fact that both teams in the regular season will touch the football in overtime. Now, I thought with that, you would see an expanded part of the playing time in overtime, but it's still 10 minutes. So that part has changed with it. Also, the kickoff rules now, the kickoff will start from the 35. If it's kicked in the end zone, you can sort of down and then get it at the 35-yard line. My thing is, how is that going to enhance you returning kicks? Charlie, if I can get the ball at the 35-yard line, that's where I'm going.
Do it every time.
My deal is I ain't bringing it back. Every once in a while I might think about it. Also, to the alignment. They allowed them to change on the return team instead of all the guys kind of all lined up together. Now, it's, you can go 6-3-2 with it. It sort of gives the return guy a little bit more of a lane value there where you can follow your blocks and head up the field with a return. And they're trying to minimize the injuries. I know in talking to Carl Johnson, who was a one-time head of NFL officiating, lives in Thibodaux. He's been on our show numerous times. Now he's a full-time official in the National Football League, said that, you know, one of the reasons why these rule changes happened was because of player safety. They felt they saw things there that could have really, really been dangerous as from a player standpoint. So they changed the kickoff rule, and they want to keep the kickoff still relevant in the NFL. Charlie, I'm not sure some of this is going to make it relevant, to be honest with you.
No, I don't think so either. Mike, the other rule that you were talking about as well with the overtime period, we were talking a little bit off air about that. So they've changed it so that both teams in the regular season get a possession guaranteed in overtime, right? But it's a 10-minute period. It's not really out of the question that if you have a long first drive, like that kind of rule becomes irrelevant. It doesn't really matter. Now, granted, if you go down and score a touchdown pretty quickly, the other team gets another chance too. So the overtime rule is something interesting. Also,
you know what that'll do? If another team scores a touchdown, kicks the extra point, and I get
go
it.
Go for two.
And I'm going to go for two.
I agree.
My thing is, I ain't leaving here tied.
No,
I'm
no
either win it
tie.
Or lose it.
No one likes a tie,
man,
Mike.
They shouldn't have ties in the NFL. That's the way I look at it. That it just should be a winner with this, one way or another. And so I think what you'll see, because now if another team, let's say they take 7 minutes off the clock on a drive, you don't have a lot of time to maneuver. And if you can score a touchdown, my thing is, man, the heck with it. Win or lose, we're going to do it on this play. One play, and we're going to go for two and try to end it.
Yeah, it's the Brian Kelly thing from Alabama a couple years back, huh, Mike? But also the expansion of instant replay. They're adding more to that to assist these officials in live game action.
And they've done good work with that before, and I think it's a little bit more expanded, Charlie,
yes.
and adding to what you were bringing up. They've always, over the last couple years, have had assist from people to tell them, hey, look, that's not really what happened. Let me explain. And they've been able to help the officials on the field. My thing, if you're going to have instant replay, you know what? Good or bad, I want it right.
Right.
Even if it hurts my team or helps whatever, I want it to be done right if you have instant replay.
This is the rule in ink. It says, by competition committee, amends Rule 15 to expand instant replay's ability to advise the on-field officials on specific objective aspects of a play and or to address game administration issues when clear and obvious video evidence is present, quote unquote. So, if there's something that the officials get wrong in action, that's saying that the video evidence, these instant replay officials can help the on-field officials as well.
Yeah, I think it is part of it where they've expanded some of the technology where they look at these plays if they got to throw it to New York or California, wherever they're looking at it. And so I'm all for instant replay, but my thing is, just get it right.
Yep.
Because how many times have we seen plays and it looks as though, hey, listen, I don't want to kick my partner in the backside, making him look bad, and they don't overturn it. You get it right. That's all I think anybody's asking for at this stage. When we come back, we'll have on with us Matthew Paris, who covers the Saints for the Times-Picayune Morning Advocate at the owners' meetings, and we'll dive into some Kellen Moore talk and also some of the rule changes that happened today and the tush push is still alive. Now, they're going to look at it again in May, but it is still alive in the NFL. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, covering the NFL owners meeting, Matthew Paris, who covers the Saints for the Times-Picayune Morning Advocate. Matt, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Before we get into some of the rule changes, I'll ask you a little bit about Kellen Moore. The one thing with Kellen, man, he's great for radio. He gives you these sound bites that are about 20, 24 seconds, nothing longer. You ain't got to worry about cutting up a bite with him the way he talks. But he seems to indicate, and I think it's obvious, that Derek Carr doesn't want to be here, but, you know, he's going to be here most likely for 2025, that the Saints are in the quarterback business to add one via the draft.
Yeah, I think that was the focus today, as, you know, we've seen Kellen Moore at all these different pro days, and they're clearly doing homework on quarterbacks. They acknowledged as much. You know, Derek Carr, they made the decision to restructure his contract, so he'll be back in 2025, but 2026 is very much up in the air right now. So, you know, I think they would do the research anyway, but given Carr's status, I think they're maybe considering it more than I thought like a month ago.
Another thing, too, is, and we'll play the bite a little bit later on in the program, he talked up a lot. I know what we've talked about here on the program, and I know if you've written about, is the emphasis on rebuilding offensive and defensive line. I think he saw that's how the Eagles won last year. I mean, listen, they got great skill talent. But man, do they beat you up front, offensive, defensive line. When the Cowboys had that run, man, they were real strong, offensive, defensive line. And he saw he didn't have it when he went with the Chargers. So I think that he's sort of telling you without telling you that those two areas that they will address that and address that fairly quickly come draft night, or nights,
yeah,
I should say.
Yeah, it was actually one of the more curious statements Kellen Moore has made so far. Is at the Combine, he said that the offensive line was a strength, and one of the reasons why he wanted the job was that, you know, it's a group that I think still needs a lot of work. Kellen Moore said today that Fuaga and Penning are going to stay at left and right tackle and move Fuaga over to right. So I do think they're set at tackles, but the interior, particularly at the left guard spot, is very much a question mark. And then on the defensive side, you know, I think they need kind of just another dynamic pass rusher to go opposite Chase Young.
Matt, one of the things I brought up here, I'm convinced that Chase Young could play that traditional 3-4 outside linebacker and also put his hand in the dirt as a guy in a four-man front. And I think you'll see, because today everything is so hybrid in this league where you see a four-man front, but it's sort of disguised in different ways. Other than Foskey, and he hasn't done squat other than on special teams here, they don't, the body type for that 3-4 outside linebacker is not on that team today.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like, what do they do with Carl Granderson? He would be the other opposite edge rusher in nickel. Cam Jordan, you know, he's probably more of a rotational pass rusher at this point of his career. So I do think they need someone on that other side. I mean, they're not really going to be in your 3-4 base look that much, but, you know, they're going to be in nickel all the time and have pass rushers get after it. So I do think it's an area that they definitely need to address.
The other thing, too, is that corner. You would seem to not have the numbers there that I know I would like if I was Brandon Staley. I'm not too thrilled. I don't have maybe that one guy, because that was the strength on this team the last couple years. They had some talent at that cornerback position. And I think fairly early they'll have to address the cornerback position. There isn't much left out there on the free agent market. I know the Chargers cornerback, I mean, he's still out there. But Asante Samuel Jr., the thing with me is, why hasn't he signed with anybody yet? So I think cornerback is an area that this team also will have to address fairly early come draft days.
Yeah, it's definitely different than it was a year ago when they picked, you know, Kule McKinstry in the second round, and you're wondering how he's going to get on the field. Now it's who's going to take the field. And, you know, they have Alante Taylor, they have Kule McKinstry, but after that, it's pretty bleak right there. That's probably an area. I mean, maybe later in the draft, depending on how you feel about some of the top corners, you know, I just think in the first round, it's probably a little rich. But, they have a lot of picks this year, and so we'll see what they do.
And then, as I mentioned, kind of getting into some of the rule changes here. I mean, the overtime one is very interesting. Mike and I were talking a little bit off air about it, like the 10-minute overtime rule. Both teams get a possession in overtime during the regular season. But in your reading of it, Matthew, what kind of happens in the type of situation where a team can just run down the clock for 10 minutes? Like, does the second team still get a possession? It's kind of my question. I just don't exactly know the wording of the rule.
Yeah, I would. It's something that wasn't brought up to Roger Goodell or anyone today about that. It is a good question. I mean, I would imagine time would expire at that point, but I don't know. That's a good one. But I think we've seen in the playoffs that because of this overtime rule, you would want the ball second. So
that's what I think. Super Bowl Sunday 2 years ago,
yep,
set the precedent that, hey, listen, give me the ball and I know what I got to do with it. I told Charlie this, Matt. I think one of the things that'll happen if I get the ball second and I score a touchdown, man, I ain't settling for no tie. I'm going for the win. I'm going to go for the 2-point conversion.
I think a lot of teams would do that, especially with how kind of progressive coaches have become analytically.
And then talking more about Kellen Moore's comments, he had a lot of great things to say about the free agents and the signings that the Saints have made in the offseason, starting with Justin Reed. He mentioned, prepping for the Super Bowl and really kind of keying in on Justin Reed with the Chiefs defense and how much of a playmaker he is back in the secondary and what he kind of adds to the black and gold defense.
Yeah, no, I mean, Kellen Moore called him a premier athlete. I thought it was interesting. Kellen Moore said that they probably would have added Reed anyway, even if they got Tre'Davious Ward from he signed with Indianapolis. They went hard after him, but he said that they were room for both. So I do think they're looking at remaking the secondary a little bit. They're definitely transitioning it to it under Brandon Staley. So it is more of a scheme that they'll have to implement. But we'll see how it develops.
His comments on Brandon Cooks really echoed. We interviewed Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys, a couple weeks ago, and Brad really mentioned the leadership that Brandon brought to the Cowboys locker room, the veteran leadership specifically. But also, Kellen brought that up today in his presser as well, where he was mentioning, he's still got the speed, he's still got the athleticism. He brings this new leadership to that young room. And also, bringing him in, it was a no-brainer move, even though they haven't really crossed paths. He mentioned that as well. They're both West Coast guys. They both have ties to the Dallas Cowboys, but they've never really crossed paths just yet.
The other thing, too, Matt, is he is still got guys in the football tank.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, veteran leadership is great, but you got to play. You got to be able to play. And what I see with Cooks is a guy that still has some athletic skills and speed that scares you. Now, you don't have a big man receiver, in the lineup, but you got some guys that can really stretch the field vertically.
Yeah, you do. And, you think about at least the way the last offense was designed is it was about stretching the field and taking advantage of the speed you had with Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave. And so Cooks is another element of that. He is coming off kind of a more injury-riddled season for his standards. He's not necessarily coming off the strongest part of his career, but I do think it gives them another option in case one of those guys gets down. And even if they're healthy, I would expect him to be in the mix. I think they see him as their third receiver.
Could you think of a value here? And it's been done a few times over the last few years, but we've seen the devaluation of the running back position. I don't think he'll be there when the Saints pick at 9. But your thoughts? I know Kellen Moore knows a lot about Ashton Jeanty because he's a Boise State guy. Could you see that scenario? If it would happen, the Saints would pick him at 9.
Yeah, for me, it's too early to say. They have so many needs on the roster. It's kind of hard to boil down to one position. But I do know that, Joel Thomas was in Boise State for his pro day. I believe they grabbed dinner or at least talked. I know Jeanty talked about that during his press conference with the media up there. So, he's a terrific player. I think he would add a lot to that room I think he would complement Alvin Kamara really well and then eventually take over as the star running back. So, you know, they definitely need more juice at that position. They haven't really gotten – I saw a stat today that they had the second fewest amount of
20-yard
rushing.
Yeah, I think Taysom Hill had those runs too.
Right, yeah, that. I think, yeah, you're right. And if the other game was probably Kamara, maybe against Dallas, you know, yeah, early in the year when they were really clicking. So it's a position that it just needs a little bit more speed, because I don't think you can really count on Taysom Hill to be that, you know, backup running back given the injury he's coming off of.
He really gushed about Chris Olave, and I think you can tell by his tone. I think he really believes that Chris Olave is that type player that could be a big-time receiver in his offense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's, you know, unfortunately for Chris Olave, you know, he has to stay healthy, and the concussions at this point of his career, I think, are a major concern. But one of the things Kellen Moore said was that, you know, he'll stay in touch with the medical staff, see how he's doing, and come up with a plan for that. But, you know, when Chris Olave is healthy, he's been one of the better receivers in this league. It's a really stacked position across the league. You know, I was tempted to call him a top 10 receiver, but, you know, there's so many guys there that maybe he's not just there yet. But I do think he has an opportunity to prove himself and put himself in that category.
I think from some of the guys in the front office, if he's there, Tyler Warren's their pick at 9. I'm convinced of that. A couple guys with some stroke, I think, really would want that. But he also talked about Juwan Johnson and being a piece of the puzzle at that tight end position. I think that's another area, because, I mean, we can almost check off every spot they got, and this team could need some help at. But his comments on Juwan Johnson.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, if you even think back to Juwan Johnson's press conference a few weeks ago, is he called Kellen Moore late at night to clarify what his role would be. And, you know, I don't necessarily know if Juwan Johnson's going to be like the Dallas Goedert in this offense, for instance, but I do know that, you know, Kellen Moore would like to take advantage of his receiving skill set, would like to have him become a little bit more well-rounded as a tight end overall. And, you know, it's, I definitely think there's room for it if they do draft Tyler Warren at 9, that, you know, they would complement each other well.
The other thing, and Charlie and I will talk about this in our next segment, but I think of, you know, last year, and I looked at this, the draft class, and 25 of the top 86 players were offensive linemen. I think you'll see reverse that this year. I think that'll be defensive linemen, 25 out of the top 86. And it just sort of flops. But I do think in looking at who they'll pick in round 2, the influence of how quickly some of those linemen come off the board, maybe late in round 1 and early into round 2, will have an influence, because you think back at those days in Dallas when that offensive line, when he was there, was really good. I mean, they had some talent up front. And you think about last year with the Eagles, I think he's trying to kind of indicate to you, I'm going to go there early, either at guard or at the tackle position, because I see that's how you win in this league.
Right. And yeah, I mean, to your point about the defensive line being so stacked in this draft, I wonder if there is a run of them necessarily early in the second round. You know, New Orleans has 9 picks in this draft. We know Mickey Loomis loves to trade up. I wonder if they have one of their guys there that they try and move up for one, because, you know, what they've done at that position over the last few weeks has been kind of really interesting to me. You know, you trade for Devon Godshaw. That move made a lot of sense to get your big nose tackle. But then they brought back Nathan Shepard and Colin Saunders as well. You know, you're mostly your 2 starters from last year. And then you throw Brian Brzee in there as well. I really don't know how it's all going to shake out. And that's one of the more interesting things I'm kind of curious about when camp starts is, you know, how does that position shake out? But I definitely think they could add someone in the draft given the talent available and what they're trying to change schematically on defense.
Yeah, I want to see Bo Davis coach that group because, yeah, as you pointed out, it's a mixed group. And not necessarily, I think, what a lot of people think, this team will run a traditional 3-4. That's not going to be the case. But one thing for sure, and I know Bo's going to talk about it a lot, you better stop the run or they're going to shove it down your throat. And that's something this football team has had some real difficulties stopping the last 2 years. You got to be able to run the football and you got to stop the run. It's old school, but it works.
Yeah, no, definitely. And they have to tackle once they get the guys wrapped up, too. I mean, that's been the other problem with this group.
Yeah, that's a story for another day. Matt, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate your insights and great work. And don't get no suntan out there, man.
Thanks, appreciate it.
All right. Matthew Paris, who's covering the owners' meeting, does a great job covering the Saints beat for the Times-Picayune Morning Advocate. When we come back, we'll talk a little draft talk on our daily special that we'll do up until draft day. And we'll talk about the offensive line class. We kind of touched a little bit about it, but it's going to be totally different than a year ago. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettay along with Charlie Long in studio. And this broke about 45 minutes ago, but Calais Campbell has re-signed back to his old team, the Arizona Cardinals. 18th season in the NFL. Man, that's Doug Atkins-like. Man, if we had a lot of time. Doug Atkins played his last three seasons with the Saints, and they got about 40,000 stories on Doug. Man, Doug was a bad-to-the-bone dude. You didn't want to mess with Doug. God bless him, man. He was 6'8 and 290 pounds, and Doug was a basketball player in high school and in college. That's where he went to Tennessee. And my neighbor was on the Browns team the same time that Paul Brown selected Doug Atkins. And Joe Clark would tell me, man, Doug did everything to get himself traded. He would aggravate Paul Brown to all in, and Paul knew how talented he was, but he didn't want to put up with some of the stuff that Atkins was doing. But Calais Campbell, Arizona Cardinal, 18th season in the NFL. Man, that's really saying something for a defensive lineman. And cut the way he is, he's a 6 foot, 7.5 guy, and you know they're going for your legs. And to stay healthy, for the most part, That's a wild run, Charlie.
By all accounts, I mean, you can talk about his play on the field. Also, a great dude off the field.
Man.
Like, it seems
unreal,
like every single year, he's a Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. And so, you just love to see his success. He's extending that career. 18 years, as you mentioned, as a defensive lineman is unbelievable. So, best of luck to Calais Campbell.
And if you knew Doug, you'd say, how the hell he lasted that long,
yeah,
too? Because Doug didn't take care of himself too well. But, man, he took care of business out on the field. And that's why he's in Pro Football's Hall of Fame. I'm going to have you cue up that comment today that Kellen Moore made on offense defensive line before we start talking about offensive line play.
I do think you want to build the best roster for, you know, you're building kind of an ecosystem, so to speak, you know, for certain players. And so I do think the offensive line, defensive line are critical. That's a very valuable piece. You know, you win and control a lot of the games with how you handle the offensive and defensive lines. Been around that for a long time with Dallas and Philly, where that's been a huge aspect of our success in both those spots. And so, you know, you'll continue to build it however you need to.
That's the most I've heard Kellen Moore talk about that. And I'm not kidding, because he gives you great sound bites. You ain't got to cut nothing, Charlie. I mean, he cuts you that 20 seconds, 16 seconds, whatever. But that's the most we've heard him talk about. I think he's telling you without telling you. They're going to show a lot of interest in it. But, you know, last year you had 9 first-round pick offensive linemen and 6 went in the second round. So 15 of the top 63 players were offensive linemen. You had 10 offensive linemen going round 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 25 of 86. I think those numbers will flip to defensive line, because this year, out of my top 75, 24 of them are defensive linemen. But what's going to happen if you're looking now and everybody sees how the Eagles won with their offensive line play? And, man, every team needs help along the offensive line. And you look at this group, and you could say, you know, Will Campbell, Armand Minbu, Kelvin Banks Jr. I think Tyler Booker's going to go in round 1 inside. I think he's the best inside player. Gray Zabel from North Dakota State, who's played all across the board, played tackle, guard, center. And if he's healthy, Josh Simmons goes in round one. Again, that's a big if, but you'll have to see about his health. That's six guys. Six. They got more than six teams looking for offensive linemen. And there are two guys, or maybe you could say me, I'd throw a third in there, that could potentially sneak into round one. Donovan Jackson from Ohio State, who has played mostly guard, but this year when injuries hit, Donovan Jackson played tackle, and I like the way he played. He was physical. He is a really good technician. You could see he knows how to use his arms and hands well. He's never not the great athlete, but he gets it done. And Josh Connolly, who is the really good athlete, man, he's got great foot movement skills. I would like him to be a little bit more physical player up front along the offensive line. Watch how teams try to maneuver now, because if you're looking for offensive linemen, I think there will be some teams that will try to trade up into the latter part of round one or the early part of round two to get their hands if Jackson isn't picked, if Connolly isn't picked. Ariante Ursay from Minnesota is another guy that you can look at. And because once you get past that group, maybe Jonah Savanaya, from Arizona, maybe in there. This offensive line class sort of dwindles down quickly. And I think the maneuver that you will see a lot of teams do is, man, I want one of those top guys. I'm going to try to trade up to get one of those top offensive linemen. We got to have help at either tackle or guard. And a lot of these guys have played multiple positions. Jackson has. Connolly's mostly played left tackle. I think Ariante's mostly played left tackle.
Right.
Jonas played left tackle, left guard. Ozzie Trapillo,
yep,
who we know a lot about. Man, covered his dad, scouted his dad. He played on those teams with Bobby and the Saints. He's played right tackle, left tackle. Wyatt Milam from West Virginia, he's played right tackle, left tackle. But how do you feel about those guys? And I think that's an area, Charlie, it's not thick, but I think the maneuvering for those two or three or four players that are those borderline guys, I think they'll get a lot of attention.
Okay, so with what Matthew Parris said, I kind of interpreted, you know, Kellen's comments a little bit differently about the two offensive tackles. He mentioned with Taliese Fuaga that, yes, they see him as a left tackle, but he was like, oh, he's a premier player. He can play anywhere on the offensive line if we ask him to. So I'm not sure if I really took that as him being locked down to left tackle. That's one thing. As far as Trevor Penning goes, he was very, very quick with the answer. He yeah, effectively said that, you know, he's a developing player, stuff like that. I'm not so certain that the Saints aren't going to target one of the top offensive tackles in the first round. And so when you're talking about those top guys, you know, the very top of the board, Will Campbell. Right? Armon Membu from Missouri. I said Will Campbell. People should know him down here. LSU left tackle. Armon Membu, the right tackle from Missouri, is another intriguing prospect. You know, we talked with a couple different. Sam Bruckhouse, the former Tulane linebacker who now does work for Sumer Sports, is really high on Kelvin Banks, the former left tackle of Texas. A little bit further down the board, though, Mike, Josh Simmons, as you kind of mentioned, torn patellar tendon. Like, if a team thinks that he's going to be good to go medically, he's going to be a first-round pick.
All but I'm not picking him with a top 20
no,
pick.
No, I'm not
coming off of that.
I'm not either. But as far as, you know, the run on offensive tackles that's going to happen late in round one, I agree with you. It's going to happen late in round one into early day two. We've talked about that. From basically picks 20 to 40, you're going to see a bunch of guys fly off the board. Simmons is going to be one of them. Gray Zabel is going to be one of them. Tyler Booker, unless, you know, maybe one of those teams like the Seahawks that desperately needs interior offensive linemen, they could potentially take him. Otherwise, he's going to go in that range as well. There's going to be that run on offensive linemen. So with the Saints picking at pick 9 and then at pick 40, if you want a premium offensive lineman in this class, you're probably going to have to do it at pick 9.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is I think supply and demand comes into play here. Just remember last year, all those offensive linemen, 9 going in round 1. And then all of a sudden, in round 2, what happens? Aurora goes to Atlanta.
Yeah.
Johnny Newton goes to the Commanders. Tavondre Sweat gets picked by the Titans. The Rams trade up for Braden Fisk. Mason Smith ends up going to Jacksonville. Chris Jenkins from Michigan ends up being a pick by the Cincinnati Bengals. You see almost the exact opposite of a year ago, but it's going to flip to the offensive line.
I agree, 1,000%. And it's interesting with this class specifically as well, Mike, because, you know, and I think the Will Campbell stuff is bogus. He's going to be a left tackle at the NFL level. But a lot of these guys that played tackle in college could also potentially play guard at the NFL level when you're talking about the Ariante Arisuri from Minnesota or Jonas Savanaia from Arizona. Those types of guys could play interior and kind of switch inside. But I think if you're talking about the top tackles in this class with Kelvin Banks, with Will Campbell, with Armon Mempu, even Josh Simmons, right? I think all those guys are going to be tackles at the NFL level, and that's why they're going to be early first-round picks.
Because I think with Will Campbell and Mimbu, it's 1A, 1B.
I agree.
You're going to have mixed opinion on there. Kelvin Banks Jr., to me, he's a clear-cut the three guy.
I agree.
But he's not Campbell or Mimbu.
We have a friend that calls into the program every day. He's going to be a Miami Dolphin.
It looks almost that because of Teron Armstead saying, now he indicated he would retire, but then you hear Mike McDaniel kind of pulling that back a little bit. So, but eventually, you know Teron's going to go down with an injury. So you better have your left tackle set up in Miami.
My point is, I think three are going in the top 15. I think it's clear-cut Mempu and Campbell, but I also think that Banks is going to sneak in kind of closer to the 15 range. I think Miami's a good landing spot for him.
And then I think you'll see the Booker Zabel
situation
happen after that. We'll come back, finish it up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long at 520. We'll have on with us Kendall Rogers, managing editor of D1Baseball.com. Big series with the Tigers as they play Oklahoma. And tonight, right here on the Big 870, Louisiana Tech. We'll be back right after this news break.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at 545 for our Bet 365 triple option feature. Again, at 6:30 tonight, LSU baseball as they play Louisiana Tech Bulldogs, and you can hear that first pitch in the entire game right here on the Big 870 WWL and free on the Odyssey app. Charlie, we had a couple people ask about the onside kick. Was there some modification to that? There was no vote at this time on the onside kick modification. They will pick that back up in the May meeting, so there may be a little bit more, light shed on if you have to always kind of tell them this is what we're going to do. It's going to be the onside kick. So it was sort of tabled until the May meeting. So we've had a couple people text us about it. Let's go to our Oakland Hard Dulips talking text line. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey guys, how y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, just wanted to, great night for college baseball. Louisiana Tech, obviously, is not what they used to be. I think they're going to give LSU all they can handle tonight. And Tulane's up in Hattiesburg against Southern Miss. Hey, look, let me just say this, and tie that into Tulane basketball playing tonight. Charlie, we talked a little bit. Tulane basketball is playing a really late game tonight in some kind of tournament against USC. Mike and Charlie, what can you tell us about this tournament? It's in Vegas, and are we leading in a direction where, you got the big dance and you got the NIT, but if they do so many of these other little CBIs and this and that, I mean, are they going to have enough Division I teams to fill all this, and at what point is it too much?
Charlie, you might know a little bit more about it, but I can tell this is moving away from the NIT, where they're trying to do right. Their own little private deals, trying to cut deals television-wise, because that television radio contracts, that's how they're going to get their money fed to them. And you can see now more and more teams saying, we'll do this independently. We'll play a series where we can share the money, and it's not with, 20-something other teams. You can share just with a couple teams.
So it's to what Jimmy's talking about. It's the inaugural season of the College Basketball Crown, which is a tournament, 16-team tournament that takes place in Vegas at T-Mobile Arena. It's a really strange thing, Mike. It kind of came out of nowhere. It hasn't been very well publicized. Obviously, Jimmy pays attention to it because Tulane basketball's in it against USC tonight for the first round of the matchup. But it's got a strange selection process, too, kind of reading into it. There's two automatic qualifiers from the Big East, the Big Ten and the Big 12, and then there's 10 at-large teams. And it's all teams that didn't make it to the NCAA tournament, obviously, kind of similar to the NIT. So it's just...
Is South Alabama that group?
It's just an... let me pull up the pool of teams specifically, but it's just a new tournament that they're kind of adding to college hoops for those that didn't make the NCAA tournament.
And to me, this is a money grab by the schools saying, you know what, I think we can do this and maybe get a bigger piece of the pie financially by doing this independent of the NIT.
So it's technically already started as well, Mike. It started on Monday.
Yeah.
See, it's got Utah, Butler. I'm going off of logos here, so I'm doing my best. George Washington, Boise State, Nebraska, Arizona State, Georgetown, Washington State, DePaul, Cincinnati, Oregon State, UCF, Colorado, Villanova, Tulane, and USC. So, I mean, it's got some decently sized names in that little kind of bracket.
But is that slanted more west and north?
Yeah, no, for
than
sure.
The south, for sure. Now, most of those teams in the south, really good teams, they ended up, in the tournament.
Right. So it's for, the teams that had middling seasons that didn't make the NCAA tournament that just wanted to go out to Vegas and participate in a 16-team bracket.
Yeah. And again, you get paid to do it. So there's always that coin. You can hear that cash register kind of ringing in the background a little bit on all of that, Jimmy. And USM baseball.
Had a tough week last week.
Had a tough,
Mike.
Tough week. The Colonels caught them even. Nichols State and a team full of a lot of guys that I know that coach there. He had told me, Mike, I got so many new guys name tags. It's one of those type of deals that you got to have. But man, USM. The one thing I do give them, man, they have had some really competitive baseball teams throughout the years, really good teams and good pitching teams.
Yeah, they weren't really punished for that you know, midweek loss to Nichols either, unfortunately. I guess I had a good weekend. I didn't keep up with it. I know my Cajuns are starting to pick it up in Sunbelt play, but that's a different story. Mike, we have a text here. I wanted to throw this at you. We have someone that's working on their own mock draft. I know we did ours a couple weeks back. Says this is from 2092. Said, I'm torn for my mock draft. Number 9, he's got Mike Green, the defensive end from Marshall. And then at number 40, Ariante Ursary, the offensive tackle prospect. Or he's deciding between that and then, so he's addressing the trenches in both of these mocks for those first two round picks for the black and gold. Armand Membu at pick 9, and then Landon Jackson, the edge for Arkansas at pick 40. So, I mean, I guess which of those kind of combinations would you prefer?
I think I'll take the Membu Landon Jackson.
I agree.
Part of that. Mike Green, and I think he'll go in the middle of round 1. I don't know about picking him at 9. And Ursaray is a guy that I think I like a little bit better than others, to be honest with you. He's played left tackle. I told you this last year. I thought he should have come out. Now, I saw the numbers, and so did he. But I think had he come out last year, he'd have been the 10th first-round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, and I thought this year he didn't play as well as he did in 2023. To be honest with you, I thought he had a much better 2023 season than 2024, but he's a big man that can move his feet, and he is a man mountain at 6'6" and 330-something pounds. And I was told he was pushing the 350 mark, and he lost about 20 pounds right before the combine. But for a big man, he can move, and you can see it in his feet, in his foot movement skills. His hand placement is really good. He's got great length to steer you out to the edge. Membu, he just takes people and puts them away at right tackle. But puts them away. And you saw teams scheming not to have their top pass rusher go up against him, and they were going on the other side. But he primarily has played right tackle. Landon is a guy that, when he came to LSU – and Coach O had told me about him. He's a tall, skinny kid that he said, I think, can really help us down the stretch if we can get some weight on him and some strength on him. Then he has the knee injury. Then the coaching change. He goes to Arkansas, and you can see what teams did with him last year. They were scheming up to not have him make the play. He was getting cut with a chip from a running back or a tight end. They were making sure he wasn't disruptive. But it is his speed, his relentless nature to the ball carrier. He's bigger and a little bit more lengthier, but he reminds me a lot of Trey Hendrickson. I told you that. That's right off the bat. His deal, pedal to the metal, I'm going to give you everything I got, and I'm going to make you pay the price if you disregard me as an athlete. And so I like Landon Jackson a lot, and I think he'll go in that neighborhood.
Early second round?
Of early part of round 2. He's got pass rush and pass rush potential.
So a couple things here. First, with Mike Green, it just kind of feels like he's destined to go either to Atlanta at pick 15 or like Tampa Bay at pick 19, right? He's going to end up in the NFC South.
And they would be good fits.
I agree.
For Mike, he was a one-year wonder. Now that's
one year was super impressive.
But that one year, man, it was like, uh-oh, here he comes again. And you talk about development, and Mike had some opportunities to go major college. I say, you know, okay, he's at Marshall, but he could have went at a power school where he could have really taken off and shown that skill set, but he decided to stay there. Man, you didn't want to face him the way he was coming off that edge.
And going to the point about the second mock that this texter had sent in with Membu and then Landon, I got a couple numbers on Membu. I've read some of them off before, but they're just so unbelievably impressive. The kid's a stud. As you mentioned, he just washes away the opponent defensive end every single snap. Here's the first number from Hayden Winks of Underdog Fantasy, tweeted this out a couple months ago. Armand Membu's pressure rate allowed against these top 50 prospects, Jalen Walker, Mykael Williams, James Pierce, Shamar Stewart, Nick Scorton, Donovan Ezeraku, and Jack Sawyer. 2.7%. And then this is another one from PFF College. Offensive tackle Armand Membu from Missouri last season. 411 pass block snaps, 0 sacks allowed, 0 QB hits allowed, and an 87.5 run block grade.
That's why the top pass rusher, he's going up against the left tackle. I ain't going up against that cat.
Mambu is the silencer. I mean, that is what he does on the offensive line. I love him as a right tackle prospect. He was my pick in the first mock that we did for the Saints at number 9. And then, you know, with Landon Jackson, like you mentioned, Mike, the kid gives 1,000% effort on every single play. I love watching Landon Jackson. And you know, the numbers, he had some really standout games in college that kind of make it seem like, oh, why aren't his numbers a little bit better? But just watch him. Like, he's seeing doubles all the time. He's seeing, like, he's a power rusher as well off the edge. I love Landon Jackson.
When you look at him, he is bigger and lengthier, and I think a tad maybe quicker. But him and Trey Hendrickson have a lot of similarities. And the way they play the game, he's a little better athlete than Trey, but man, can Trey play? Once he got his weight right with the Saints, you could see he had hit that groove. And he was a really good college player with Landon. I think he's a young man that if he can stay healthy,
yeah,
he's got a chance to be a Hendrickson-like player in the National
Football
League.
So that is four prospects to watch if the Saints address the trenches in the first two rounds. And as we mentioned with Kellen Moore's comments about building the offensive and defensive lines, that's going to be a priority.
Charlie, Ariante Ursari, he's one of the few guys, if you held the microphone, you'd have to look up to him.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
You don't have to do that too often.
He's built like a wooden shed, man. He is gigantic.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. We'll have Kendall Rogers, managing editor of D1Baseball.com, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long, while we continue to try to get Kendall Rogers on. Charlie, I think you have a couple texts that you want to bring up to us there.
Yeah, so we also had another text saying that the Saints should trade down in the first round. This is from 0198. Trade down in the first round and draft quarterback and go Jackson Dart with their first round pick. And so, you know, with the quarterback class, Mike, you and I agree, and it's not consensus, but we agree that Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward are both going to be gone within the top three picks. After that, it's going to be interesting. We think that Jackson Dart's a first-round pick, probably closer to
where?
Probably closer to the 20-ish range. And maybe a team will trade back into the first round to get him, so we'll have to see what happens there. But your thoughts on Jackson Dart?
Yeah, you know, having watched him as a freshman at USC where he started, and then all of a sudden, you know, they got a coaching change, and Lincoln Riley says, I'm bringing in a guy from OU. That Caleb Williams guy took over, so he had to split the scene. And he goes to Ole Miss. I thought early on he was a bit of a forcer to get some throws in. But over the last couple of years, you've seen his maturity. He is a super smart guy. I mean, really intelligent. He throws that short intermediate route really well. The deep passes, I don't know if this is part of playing for Kiffin or his own mentality. The negative with him is, when you watch him, is that he will turn down an easy throw 8-9 yards downfield to try to hit the home run shot. Okay, you got to break that habit. You can't always hit that big play every time you throw it. But, you know, I said this when LSU played Ole Miss. I told this to Herb Tyler. He's going to be a first-round pick player because you could tell he has the moxie with him, the smarts, the arm talent. I think physically he will get bigger and stronger as he gets older. But you know, you got to be convinced he's your guy if you're going to pick him with a top 15 pick. Now, here was the thing last year. Was any of us convinced Michael Penix Jr. was a top 15 pick a year ago?
I wasn't convinced Bo Nix was a top 15 pick.
Now, I thought both would go in round one.
Right.
But I didn't think both of them would be early picks like that. And so, will there be a team that falls in love with Jackson Dart? I would say that probably is the case. Somebody will. Say, he's my guy, and let me target him. Will it be a trade back or a trade back in? Because, you know, that could be a team that picks early that says, you know, let's maybe do a little maneuver to try to get us back into round one, especially in that 16 to 20 group. Because once you get past there, man, from 19 to 48, man, the grades are so, so tight. So it's going to be a team that falls in love with him, just like Atlanta fell in love with Michael Penix Jr. And in that particular case, it was the owner. It was Arthur Blank. He made that choice. That's who I want y'all to pick. And he made that choice. In Denver, I'm convinced that's Sean Payton. They can have all the scouts in the world. It was Coach Payton that says, Bo Nix is my guy. That's who I want to be the quarterback, and that's where he picked him, And there'll be a team like that for Jackson Dart.
You know what I see, Mike, and I think this is potential. If he falls past, 21, right, where the Steelers are selecting, it makes all the sense in the world to me for the Vikings at pick 24 to trade back. I mean, the Vikings made so many trades last year to secure J.J. McCarthy and Dallas Turner. They only have four draft picks this year, Mike. Four. So if any team is going to trade back in that 20-ish range, it feels like they would be the one to do it. They have, their 24th overall pick. They have a third-round pick, a fifth-round pick, and a sixth-round pick. That's all they got. So for a team that might fall in love with them as well, because if you look a couple spots down the ladder, the Los Angeles Rams picking at pick 26. And I think that's another spot, just like the Steelers, that could be a potential landing spot for someone like Jackson Dart. If you're trying to go up and get him, it feels like the Minnesota Vikings at 24, if he's available at that time, would be the team to tango with.
I don't think he'll be available at 24.
You think he's going to go beforehand?
I think he'll go before that.
So the Steelers at 21 make all the sense in the world to me. But you think one of those teams ahead of them would
potentially trade down? I think everybody knows it too.
Yeah.
And so, okay, if I know and I want him, I'm going to get to 19 or 20. I'm going to
trade
pick,
up with Tampa or Seattle.
Yeah, I'm going to leapfrog you on that and that particular deal. We also had a text asking me about where I rated Jack Besh. And, with Jack, he is one of the few, I would say, earlier round selections who is a bigger receiver, terrific route runner, got great hands. Fantastic eye-hand coordination. Is he a super explosive guy? No. But, man, he knows how to set you up, get separation downfield. Then after he makes the catch, he's a tough guy to bring down one-on-one downfield. But what jumps out at me is his size, his ability to make a play when arms and hands are around him. They'll come up with the catch, got great hands. Also, to his concentration skills. That really sort of jumps out. So I would look at Jack as a guy late in round two or real, real early in round three, in that range of 50 to 65. Somewhere in there, that's where Besh is going to go. And I told you this before, Puka Nacua.
I love that comp.
That jumped. First time I saw Nacua with the Rams. I was like, man, I've seen this cat. And it was Besh. And, man, you could see they have a lot of similarities between the two of them. I think probably Puka's a little bit more explosive.
Yeah.
And I think Besh is a little bit more physical receiver downfield. But they kind of both the same type players.
I love Besh's hands. Everything that touches his fingertips is just caught instantly. He doesn't drop anything. And so I love him as a prospect. Mike, I'm interested.
You know he dropped one pass this year.
Just one.
90 targets.
Oh, my goodness.
One.
He's incredible, Mike. I love Jack Besh. You don't have to convince me on him at all. As far as the wide receiver class goes, we've talked a little bit about this too, Mike. It's an interesting one because last year's class was really loaded at the top with receivers. This year, it's like Tet and then, Matthew Golden is probably going to be a top 15 pick. We'll see what happens with Luther Burden.
A lot of people, I guess, maybe have a little bit better connection than we do. Have him going to the Cowboys.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah was the first to put that out there.
I remember when Daniel put it out and people were saying, what? He's going to the Cowboys? You got to be kidding. But that looks like a landing spot. A lot of people have come sort of peak repeat and regurgitated it over and over again. The exact same thing Jeremiah had. I thought he would be a little bit later pick in round one. And I thought maybe even Tampa Bay might be a spot for him. Matthew Golden got great speed. But, man, he is really, really progress extremely well as a route runner. Let's go to our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line. He is the managing editor for D1Baseball.com, Kendall Rogers. Kendall, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
You got it, brother. How's everything going?
Going great. Kendall, I think all LSU fans is, okay, Louisiana Tech, okay, we'll take care of business tonight. But, man, give us the breakdown of Oklahoma, because I think, you know, that, again, sets up a big series for the Tigers. And when you're able to sweep, I don't care who you play, and this weekend and winning those three games against Mississippi State after what happened against Texas, LSU needed that. But give us a little breakdown of the Sooners.
Yeah, I think the big thing with Oklahoma is they've got a really, really good number one guy in Tyson Witherspoon. And frankly, his brother Malachi is a big-time arm, too. He's not quite as consistent as Kyson. But, you know, Kyson Witherspoon, maybe you could argue one of the top one, two pitchers in the country in the first half of the season. I like Oklahoma's pitching depth. Obviously, you know, Cam Johnson is a guy LSU fans know well. He's kind of, you know, been hobbled off and on a bit. But, you know, the big thing for LSU against Oklahoma is Oklahoma's offense is not super powerful. They're not one of those offensive lineups where you're going to get yourself in a situation to where they're going to hit, you know, four or five bombs in a game. What they're typically going to try to do is manufacture runs, really put a lot of pressure on your catchers, and, you know, move runners that way. So they're not a team that they go to the plate and you're like, oh no, this is going to be a long day. But they can get it done. So pitching is kind of their thing.
Kendall, we've talked about it with so many different people. You know, actually, it was Scott Sanders, a former Major League Baseball pitcher, that brought it up to me last year, that he was like, man, Mike, Jarrett Jones, you could see his transformation. That it used to be either it was a strikeout, a home run, or a walk. And now he's being more selective hitting the ball. And I've always felt, and Scott and I have talked about this, as it heats up now, we get, and especially in the South, as we get away from those really maybe cooler mornings and cooler nights, too, it gets hot, and then it stays hot. That's really going to help Jarrett Jones. Your thoughts on watching him progress overall as a hitter?
Yeah, it's pretty special. And then, I mean, this is a guy that I felt like when he arrived at LSU was obviously a power hitter. I don't feel like he was a complete hitter. But, you know, now the thing that I really like about Jarrett, he's a complete hitter. He's hitting for a lot of power. His approach is outstanding. And here's the other thing I love is that his defense has actually gotten elite. You know, I don't know what special formula that Jay Johnson has, but you look at the success rate he's had with guys at either third base, you know, with Tommy Tanks and Jacob Berry, and then at first base with Trey Morgan and now Jarrett Jones. LSU has the right formula defensively at those corner spots. So as good as a hitter as he is, I would say the strides he has made from a pitching standpoint might even be more impressive to me.
Kendall, I think I surprised some people yesterday when I mentioned that LSU, after their sweep of Mississippi State, 7-2 record in SEC play, fifth place in the conference.
Yeah.
I mean, the conference is unbelievably loaded at the top this year. And, you know, LSU's number 7 in D1 baseball's most recent top 25 poll, but they're behind four other SEC teams that are 8-1 in conference play, with Tennessee, Arkansas, Georgia, and Texas. Your thoughts on the top of the conference? Then we have a huge matchup this weekend coming up with Georgia and Texas.
Yeah, the SEC is really interesting in the sense that I feel like the top half of the conference is a lot better than the bottom half. And, you know, we'll see if that continues in the second half. You know, we'll see if Florida, Mississippi State, A&M, teams like that have a run in them. But right now, I'll tell you what, I mean, you look at LSU, you know, Arkansas, I really felt like last weekend against Vanderbilt, they were very offensive, which, you know, Arkansas is typically a team we look at and go, oh, their pitching attack's really good, but the offense has a long way to go. They're very offensive. You know, LSU, obviously, and then, you know, you look at Tennessee and Georgia, and, you know, Wes Johnson has done a tremendous job at Georgia. I mean, they're hitting at a high clip. They're starting to pitch really well. Colton Smith is awesome over the weekend. And, of course, Tennessee. I would argue that, you know, Tony is doing probably his best coaching job this year, given what they lost last year, just with how dominant they've been.
One of the things, Kendall, when he left LSU, I got a chance to talk to Wes Johnson, and I asked him, you know, how big of a hurdle this is at Georgia. And he put his hand almost an inch from the ground. He said, that high. He said, we're going to win, Mike, and win fast at Georgia. Why was he right about that? And he has taken that program big-time heights. And, you know, we talk so much about Georgia football, but the baseball program and that guy who is a really great pitching coach, he has taken them to another level baseball-wise.
Yeah, he really has. And I think the biggest thing for Jay is, or excuse me, Wes, is that he's done an awesome job with the portal. If you go look at, you know, what Georgia did last year with the portal, and you look at what they've done this year, or what they did, you know, last summer leading up to this year, with, you know, the guys like Robbie Burnett from UNCG, you know, Rylan Zaborowski, probably the best breakout player in college baseball this year. He's been insane. You know, when he was at Miami, Ohio, he was a power bat who was, frankly, very, very inconsistent. He's been awesome. So the biggest thing with Wes is he's doing a really good job of evaluating the portal. And once he's getting those guys on campus, they're producing. So in the same breath, we're kind of talking about, you know, the defensive formula that Jay has with LSU, the hot corners. It's kind of like, I want to know what the secret sauce is for Georgia in terms of portal, you know, evaluations. They've done a really good job with it, and that's why they're one of the best teams in college baseball.
Kendall, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you about LSU's kind of emergence on the mound. It feels like they're starting to find those pieces for success for weekend series and SEC play. Cade Anderson, obviously the game one starter every single weekend, but then Zach Cowan, who's been following him up recently, has been, Jay's called him the MVP of the team multiple times. He's been fantastic out of the bullpen, the Wofford transfer. Then you have Anthony Ianson in game two, who's really kind of emerged to be a really solid game two starter. Kaysen Evans, the freshman, had a really strong relief appearance, an extended relief appearance against Mississippi State. But then the question for most LSU fans is who else is going to kind of be that next guy out of the bullpen for them? You know, William Schmidt, I think, has all the talent in the world to do it, but Jaden Newt also has been kind of solid too. Your thoughts on, you know, outside of those top four pitchers, who can really step up on the mound?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I thought when I saw LSU in Austin a couple weeks ago, I thought it was a bullpen full of throwers and not necessarily ultra-refined pitchers yet. And that happens. Like, some of these young guys like Will Schmidt, like, it's going to take them time, especially in those kind of atmospheres, to really, you know, progress and be dominant. So I think he's kind of the one guy for me when you just look at the sheer stuff that you kind of look at and go, man, I could see that dude, you know, being really, really good at the end of the year. And so I would say he's kind of the leader in the clubhouse for me. Obviously, I think they hope, you know, that Gavin Guidry at some point can get back in the mix. But, I mean, the problem with Guidry, you know, I run into is that when you're dealing with kind of a back issue like that, I mean, as we keep going on and on each week, it's like, man, back injuries are tough. And you just, at this point, you kind of just assume that you won't be able to count on him. So those younger guys are going to have to step up for LSU to reach its goal, which is competing and potentially winning a national championship.
Kendall, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. I got to tell you, though, man, if people really want insights on college baseball, man, you guys at D1 Baseball, there is no better spot to go to but D1Baseball.com. You guys do an awesome job.
Appreciate it, boys.
All righty.
Thank you so much, man. Y'all have a good night. Appreciate y'all.
All righty. Thank you. Kendall Rogers, Managing Editor for D1Baseball.com. We come back. It'll be our Bet 365 triple option feature right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, it's our Bet 365 triple option feature. Myself along with Steve Geller and also Charlie Long. I'll start first, and looks as though Buzz Williams, after all the talk that he would head to Maryland, is headed that way. 52 years old, 62% winning percentage in college basketball. A&M, before then Virginia Tech, before then Marquette. And in 2006-07, he was a UNO privateer head coach. And so, man, Buzz Williams, he's got a lot of W-2s in a short period of time. But he's won. You know, he's won everywhere he's went. And so Buzz now at Maryland, and a guy that sort of started as a head coach right here in New Orleans with the privateers.
I heard you guys talking earlier about some of the rule changes coming up in the NFL, some that have been put on hold now till later on. But something that is happening this season, guys, the NFL is taking over Christmas in 2025. Triple header Thursday, December 25th. Two games will be on Netflix, one on Amazon. If the NFL sticks to their same Christmas triple header schedule that it's had in the past, we'll have games staggered throughout the day with kickoff times noon, 3:30, and then 7:20 at night. The NFL has scheduled a total of 8 Christmas games over the past 3 years, and they've all had huge TV ratings. No surprise there. The two Christmas games from last season, they both registered more than $24 million on Netflix. Now, that's a pretty big number for games that are only available through streaming.
And a holiday where, you know, you do have a little bit of travel involved.
Sure.
To have those type numbers, Steve, is phenomenal. But it goes to show you, man, NBA kind of squawked a little bit. Man,
sorry.
Get in the ring. You, not with us. No, we had another level. And the NFL showed it now, a triple header on Christmas Day.
Now, the teams that'll be decided, we'll find that a little later on in May when the NFL schedule does come out. So a little while to see that. Hopefully we don't have the Saints on a Christmas, because that's always a rough time with family time.
Yeah, I got you. Charlie?
Guys, ESPN had a great article this morning talking about the firing of Taylor Jenkins from the Memphis Grizzlies. And I read into it. It's a very, like, it's last week, we were all just flabbergasted. You're like 10 games away from the playoffs. You're in the middle of the Western Conference playoff picture. Why would you fire your head coach? And that question wasn't exactly answered in this article, but there's kind of more behind it that I think is really fascinating to kind of get into. The article was written by Ramona Shelburne, Tim McMahon, and Michael C. Wright. I recommend anyone that's a basketball fan to go check it out. It details basically the entire saga that had led up to this moment, which just shocked the NBA world. Taylor Jenkins was forced by ownership to fire 5 of his assistant coaches entering the 2024-25 season. And if that weren't enough, and to kind of tell your, you know, players what kind of hot seat you are entering the season, they kind of forced them to hire on a couple new pieces, including, you know, someone from Europe that was going to bring all these new offensive ideas. And what really happened here was apparently Ja Morant, the star point guard of the Memphis Grizzlies, did not have the ball in his hands enough, guys, this season. I know he's dealt with injury issues as well, but the new coaching overhaul changed things for the Memphis Grizzlies offense that Morant wasn't the biggest fan of. So, you know, after the All-Star break, the Grizzlies start to fall apart a little bit. They're not winning games as often as they were pre-All-Star break. And all of a sudden, the seat gets too hot and Taylor Jenkins gets fired. Now, one thing that was mentioned in this article that I think is fascinating, they talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers, right? J.B. Bickerstaff had led the Cleveland Cavaliers to the playoffs multiple times, including last year. They make it to the second round, but they're not good enough to get over the hump. They end up moving on from J.B. Bickerstaff, and it's a win-win situation where they bring in Kenny Atkinson. Now the Cleveland Cavaliers are one of the best teams in the entire NBA. J.B. Bickerstaff leaves. He goes to Detroit, and he revitalizes the Pistons. And so that's what I think the Memphis Grizzlies are hoping they can do. Yes, Taylor Jenkins is a good young coach that's gotten them to the playoffs multiple times in his tenure there. They're hoping they can find their Kenny Atkinson and have that type of Cleveland Cavaliers resurgence as well.
What did I tell you when you text me what this was all about? Ownership.
Yeah, it was an ownership move, but it's also the players. And so a good, and this is my kind of point about the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Detroit Pistons as well. I think Taylor Jenkins very easily could take over for any of those teams at the bottom of the league and have a resurgence like the Pistons are having with J.B. Bickerstaff. So that's kind of the connection there. I think it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, because, you know, this to me was a simple one. Once I saw it and then you text me about it, I was like, Charlie, I can figure this one out. Ownership here, okay? They bucked heads somewhere along the lines here on how the team has to be run. And when you're a billionaire and you've made your money another way, you think you know everything about everything.
The owners know best, Mike D.
And then when they sign that check, they do know best.
And so that's what we're looking at here. I think the Grizzlies have moved on. They're looking towards the future. They're trying to follow the Cleveland Cavaliers model of finding their Kenny Atkinson out there to take them to the next level. They're committing basically to their core group of players, yep, just like Cleveland did. And so at the same time, Taylor Jenkins can be someone's J.B. Bickerstaff. He's going to get signed somewhere, and I think whatever team goes out and gets him, you know, we'll see how many coaches get fired at the end of the NBA season. Someone's going to get a very good young coach in Taylor Jenkins.
That's it for our Bet 365 triple option feature. Finishing up here on hour number two of Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Steve and Charlie will be on till 6:30. Y'all got more sound from Kellen Moore, right?
Yeah, we'll dive into that here, whatever he had to say at today's owners' meetings. That was early this morning. A lot of cuts on Kellen talking about some of the guys that are on staff already with the Saints.
And just remind everybody, at 6:30 tonight, Tigers play Louisiana Tech Bulldogs right here on the Big 870 WWL. Be back right after this news break.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into today's Tuesday edition of Sports Talk. This April Fool's Day, no joke here. We're going to 6:30 this evening. That's when we'll hand things over to the LSU Sports Radio Network for first pitch between LSU baseball and Louisiana Tech. The action coming up, WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Want to get right into some Saints audio that we got today from the NFL owners meetings. Head coach Kellen Moore sat with the media for a half hour really early on this morning. It was like 6:45. The Saints were streaming this on YouTube as well. So you got to have breakfast with Kellen Moore this evening. Was asked a ton of questions. A lot about the player aspect I wanted to get into today. Now that coach has had time to really dissect this roster, sit down with his players and talk to him. He was asked about wide receiver Chris Olave and his thoughts on the wideout coming back from injury this season.
Chris is a phenomenal player. Had a huge impact on this team. He's going to have a huge impact from a medical side. On my side, it's just education and understanding the circumstances he is in. Obviously, we feel very comfortable with Chris. Understand he's been through a lot the last year or two, and so we feel like there's a plan in place to continue to let him progress. And certainly, I get the feeling that he's really, really excited about this opportunity.
Now, coming into this Kellen Moore era, I think it's pretty exciting for the offensive side of the ball. You know, we've been mired with Dennis Allen's defensive, heavy scheme, really being centric on that with his football team. And this year now with the Saints and Kellen Moore, you know that offense is going to be really lighting it up. Hopefully more of what we saw in weeks one and two from earlier last season. But there's a new addition as well in that wide receiver room in Brandon Cooks. And Kellen Moore talked about the new addition at wide receiver, someone he really didn't know too much about.
I had never met Brandon. Our circles were very close. Him being a Northwest guy, playing at Oregon State, and then obviously going to Dallas at one point as well. Phenomenal leader, phenomenal player. I think that combination is very valuable for us. You know, he can still run, he can still play. He had kind of an unfortunate season last year just with the injuries and the setbacks with relation to that. So, his targets and catches and stuff were down. If he plays a full season, they probably look a really heck of a lot different. And so we feel like he's still got the player in him. And the leader that he's going to be hugely valuable just for our entire team.
Brandon Cooks coming back to the black and gold was a first-round draft pick of this team. And it's really refreshing to hear, I guess, from some of the folks we've talked to, the voice of the Dallas Cowboys. You're hearing from Kellen Moore that the leader that Brandon Cooks has become, because I felt that wasn't the case early on in his career, where it was kind of a me guy, and it seems to be more of a team guy now, which definitely is something attractive to bring into this offense that is being rebuilt under Kellen Moore. Going to be a lot of young pieces in there. A piece that was re-signed by this team in tight end Juwan Johnson back in the mix. Got a pretty hefty payday from the black and gold, and a lot of folks are hoping to see that breakout season we keep expecting from the tight end. Kellen Moore talked about the re-signing of Juwan.
He's been a really good player in this league. We're excited with where he can go. Certainly his ability with the ball in his hands is critical. It's very valuable. His ability to play in the second and third level, a little deeper passing game concepts with the tight ends. Not all the guys can stretch the field that much vertically, and we feel like he can. And so, I think some of the stuff we've done in the past with these tight ends that we've had in some other stops, we feel like we can add to his game.
That's a big key right there. Kellen Moore said some of the things they've been able to do in the past with the tight end. We just saw last season what the Eagles were able to do with a guy like Dallas Goedert, and hopefully this offense will be more conducive to utilizing Juwan Johnson's talent. We know he's a wide receiver converted to a tight end, is definitely a big pass-catching threat, needs to improve a little more, still constantly in, you know, being involved in the run game as a blocker. But Juwan's always been willing, putting in the work, and he definitely improved in that area. But just at times in the offense for his production, at least, has disappeared, where you really hadn't seen him show up in the stat sheet in games. But there were times where he's been on fire, and it seemed like a guy that was really unstoppable, especially in the red zone. A target there that interested to see how this team utilizes. Another guy in the offense that we are curious to know how he's going to be doing in Kellen Moore's scheme is a guy, Taysom Hill, who ended last year, unfortunately, with an injury, a torn ACL. Definitely been busy with rehab. Kellen Moore was asked how Taysom's doing right now.
I mean, I talked to Taysom, obviously. Obviously we feel he's going through his process, and you don't want to rush, allow him to go through his process. He's going through the recovery phase of this thing and the rehab. And so, Taysom's been a premier player in this league. We feel great about him, but let him kind of go through his stages of this, and we'll see where it goes.
Still with Taysom Hill, obviously in that recovery mode. And I don't think that he's going to be a guy that'll be ready to go week one, considering how late that injury occurred for him last season. I believe it was December 2nd or 3rd, around there. But we'll see if he can power through and be available for this team early on in the season. I just have a big question mark right off the bat for week one for a guy like Taysom Hill. Looking at the quarterbacks, a specialty for Kellen Moore, that's what he played in college. That's what he played in the pros. And everybody wants to know about Derek Carr. What's he been up to? Haven't heard much from him from Super Bowl to Mardi Gras. It just seems like a big absence. We haven't even heard Derek Carr's comments about getting to work with a guy that's a new head coach of the Saints in Kellen Moore. And here's what the new boss of the Black and Gold had to say about the QB.
Derek is obviously a really good quarterback in this league. We've been pretty consistent as we've gone through this process. With the restructure, as far as just giving ourselves some flexibility from a roster standpoint. Derek, I'm excited to have him back with us really shortly. Obviously, April 14th will start, and I think that's the fun part. These guys go through the offseason. They have a chance to spend time with their family, invest in all that, which is the right thing to do. And once you get back April 14th, you kind of begin the process of football's in the fold, and it'll be a great process.
The sense that he's bought in, though, excited about what?
Yeah, we're excited to team up.
Excited to team up, and you heard him mention twice there, April 14th. That's the start of Saints organized team activities, folks. Voluntary workouts for the Black and Gold will start then. I think it's six teams in the NFL with new head coaches are allowed to begin their offseason workout programs a little earlier since they do have a new head coach involved. Another quarterback, meanwhile, on the Saints roster that Kellen Moore will be getting to work with will be second-year signal caller Spencer Rattler. What does Kellen Moore know about the Rattler coming into this situation with the Saints?
We went through the evaluation process last year when we were in Philadelphia, just watching him in South Carolina. Good player, tons of tools. Obviously, he played in some challenging circumstances, and I think that's an important context as we kind of evaluated it. You want to make sure he's going through the right process. Is he making good decisions? Is he going through his progressions? Is he hanging in the pocket? You saw a lot of those things. Results can be a little bit uncontrolled variables a little bit in his circumstances, and so we're excited to continue to build and develop him as he goes through his second off. I think that's always that second offseason for a lot of guys is a huge jump. Your first year, you're just swimming. Any player, this is your first offseason. You go right from your college season to training, draft. It's just like, holy cow, when is this thing going to slow down for me? And it doesn't through that whole first year for all these players. And then you get to that second offseason, it's like, okay, I've had a chance to breathe. I've gone through an offseason program. Now I'm in OTAs for the second time. I think there's huge jumps for those guys always.
A seasoned Spencer Rattler coming into this year. It'll be year two for the Rattler. Interested to see how he develops now under Kellen Moore's tutelage. Looking at the defensive side of the ball, for me, the crown jewel, obviously, of free agency was the addition of safety Justin Reed coming back to Louisiana as well. Very excited to be here. We got to talk to him last Friday. Kellen Moore talked about the addition of the safety to this Florida Lee D.
a premier player in our league, premier person in our league. We nailed it when we were able to get Justin. So obviously you recognize there's a lot of other teams chasing after him. And so we feel really, really excited that ultimately he made the decision he wanted to come back to Louisiana. And we're just so fired up, you know, going into the Super Bowl, preparing to play the Chiefs. When I was in Philadelphia, watching him on film, he was one of the big impact players on that field. And so we felt great, you know, having the opportunity to team up with him.
Justin Reed going to be wearing the black and gold this season. He'll be right across from Tyrann Mathieu, the two safeties from Louisiana, making up that black and gold secondary in the safety position. We'll be interested to see how that all shakes out there. I'm sure the Saints are still looking to add some more depth pieces to that spot as well. Kind of thin at the safety spot. So we'll see how they end up doing in free agency and also the draft. Also, Kellen Moore with the NFL draft approaching. He was asked, what is his draft philosophy?
Obviously, you want to get the best players you can. I think that's the first and foremost, most important aspect of it, is don't pass up really good players just to, you know, fit a certain specific position. When they are in the same tier, on the same level, obviously you're going to lean into players that you feel like can you know, get on the field early, can help you in a really critical position. And so you're balancing those two. I think everyone will probably say similar things. But I think that's hugely valuable. And we're excited to go through the process here in the next 2 weeks to kind of start building that board.
That was our Tuesday Sound Bank. Listening to Saints head coach Kellen Moore at the NFL owners meetings this morning. We're going to take a break and get you ready. LSU baseball coming up against Louisiana Tech right here on WWL. We're taking a break. Be back with more sports talk after this. Closing up sports talk as we get ready for LSU baseball taking on Louisiana Tech. We know that William Schmidt will start on the bump tonight. So much for him not getting starts on Tuesday anymore, like Jay Johnson had said earlier. I'm curious to know Jay's rationale between going with Schmidt tonight.
I imagine that, well, it's going to be interesting to see if Jaden Nuke gets, you know, some action at some point.
He's been the
midweek starter recently. He's actually performed very well in the role. But maybe Jay wants to kind of save him for the weekends now, too, as a big bullpen piece. So we were talking about with Kendall Rogers there, Steve, like who's going to be that next bullpen piece to emerge behind Zach Cowan and Kaysen Evans, because they need that third guy.
Yeah, we also got Jake Brown starting in outfield with a lefty on the mound for La Tech. And then Michael Braswell at third base. Ethan Fry is the DH for this evening. For Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller, folks. Coming up next, LSU baseball taking on Louisiana Tech. WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Talk to you tomorrow with more of Sports Talk. Have a great night.